Gorgui just picked his pocket. Gorgui's off to the races. He'll drive into the paint. Step through move on Payton, and he'll finish with a right hand. How about that for Gorgui Jang?
Yeah. I've been able to do some light running, do some pick and roll stuff. You know, not at full speed, and done some individual work. So basically, kind of building every day.
Inside, Vucevic along the baseline, spins, goes up, shot blocked again. Two possessions, two blocks for Karl Anthony Towns.
Why don't we make shots again? You know, we're moving the ball, we're getting open looks. We didn't make shots. Some of them, I mean, both teams. Nobody's going to get a perfect shot every time. Obviously, we would like a wide open shot every time, but it's not going to happen. But we got enough good looks. We just didn't convert.
Hello and welcome to the latest Wolves Wire podcast brought to you by the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network. Follow the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network on Twitter at HPB Network. As always, I am here with Tim Fakeless, contributor to Sporting News, as well as in Wolf Among Wolves. Timmy, tell us a little bit about the Jazz track, or do you not remember? It's okay, I'll keep going. I'll edit it out.
Hold on. Let me think.
I'll pull up the Gmail.
No. Don't. It was, was it Brad Meldow?
I don't know. That's why I asked.
I gotta look.
It's okay, you look it up. Anyway, programming note, we've been absent the last 2 weeks. I don't know if anybody noticed. But, you know, life's busy. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays. If we don't talk to you by then, we are here now, and it's the best we can do. The sky appears to be falling in Wolvesville. Sam Mitchell is apparently a terrible coach, needs to be fired, and has to go. And there's all these different reasons for that. So in order to properly, I think, or appropriately, rather, assess the situation, Tim, why don't we just take it from the top?
What's the top? Should we talk about their records?
No, I think you got to go back from the beginning in September when Sam Mitchell took over, back when Flip Saunders was still alive. You know, they took over, then they hired Brian Gates officially to make their coaching staff. You had Sam Mitchell, you have Sidney Lowe, and then you have Brian Gates. All of those guys had, I'd say, respectable amount of experience at various levels. It's been a while since Sam Mitchell coached in the NBA. Sidney Lowe was, albeit a not very successful NBA coach for a short period of time, still an NBA coach. And then Brian Gates adds the gray hair value. Over 10 years experience coaching either in the D League or overseas. He has told the media that he has coached against Jamario Moon in 5 different leagues. Did you know?
Pretty, I didn't before that.
That's pretty cool. And he once coached in the Carolinas Basketball League, the CBL, which is formerly the XBL, which is like the Extreme Basketball League, where you got an extra point for dunking. He didn't coach under those rules, but the person who coached the team, Hickory Nuts, that he went 22-0 with and won the championship in the CBL, he took over that team. The coach who had it before him was Mitchell Wiggins. Fun fact.
Wow.
A little interesting tie there we learned about Brian Gates. I've only talked to him a little. He doesn't strike me as like, you know, when he first got hired, it's like, well, could he be the next head coach? And I bought into that a little. I don't necessarily buy into it as much now, having talked to him. Although he is relatively active with interaction with officials on the bench. Have you noticed anything?
Yeah, well, I mean, even the last game I went to, they were playing, I'm blanking really hard on just everything right now.
Orlando.
Yeah, they were playing Orlando. And even as the Orlando players would set up on offense before the ball would even cross half court, when Alfred Payton would bring the ball up, you could tell that Gates already knew what the play was. Ryan Saunders was doing this a lot, too. And this might be a collective coaching thing, but he was yelling out whatever play it was. And the defense was reacting accordingly. It was cool to watch.
Yeah, he's a very, I mean, he spent the last 5 years with New Orleans. I know specifically worked with Tyreke Evans and Luke Babbitt. did some work with them. Yeah, Anthony Davis, obviously. New Orleans is sort of in shambles right now. I don't necessarily think there's a correlation between their struggles and Gates' absence, but all the while, we've already addressed that with Gates and Mitchell and Lowe. I mean, those are some experienced guys. Ryan Saunders is a film room junkie. I don't think there's any, there's not much dispute about his qualifications to have his position.
I mean, he coached in Washington, too. The Wolves weren't his first gig. He's been around for a little while.
So, and then David Adelman rounds up the assistant coaches, unless you want to get into, unless you want to include the veterans. It's a pretty experienced coaching staff, wouldn't you say? Although there isn't a sort of a main head to the dragon.
Yeah, I think just based on the way they interact in the huddle, it seems to me, and I could be totally wrong, that Sidney Lowe is kind of the head assistant, if there is one. Only probably because Mitchell and Lowe go so far back. I think Lowe is an assistant under Flip when Mitchell was there.
Well, they were both on the Wolves inaugural team.
Right, yep, and they were teammates, exactly.
So you see Sam Mitchell, who's been around since the very beginning.
Yes.
And came back to mentor Garnett. I mean, everybody knows the story. Sort of the linchpin right now holding things together. And at the time when he took over, where this is all getting back to, is there was no market for, they weren't going to go find another head coach. They didn't assume Flip was going to become extremely ill and then pass away. They were going to measure his timeline in months, and maybe he would come back halfway through the season, or maybe he would miss the entire season. But there was never a search for another coach in place. And considering the circumstances, it's not like cancer scheduled to take over Flip's body when it did. Things could be a lot worse, couldn't they? I mean, can't you think of other coaching staffs around the league who would be in this position? Like today I posted on Twitter, if you swap Sam Mitchell and Luke Walton, where are the Wolves right now?
Yeah, I mean, obvious with the obvious exception of, the whole Flip thing, I think everything has gone all right. I mean, there are little things that everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, a lot of people are nitpicking at, which we'll get into, but the Wolves are 8-10. They were projected by most people, including me, to win around 25, 26, 27 games. They're 8-10 through their first 18. I think they could be doing a lot worse than they've done so far. And with all of this happening with Ricky Rubio missing almost half of those games.
A concerning amount of games.
Well said.
And with, as you told me earlier, Rudy Gobert, what happened?
Yeah, he's out indefinitely. A knee sprain, I think it was.
The Pelicans are struggling. Yep. Denver's terrible. Phoenix, Houston, who we'll get into, is not that good right now, although I think a lot of people just assume they're going to pull it together. Yeah. That's not for certain, though. The West, the bottom of it anyway, seems to not be as strong as maybe we thought it would be entering the season.
Sure.
The Grizzlies have played remarkably well lately, or better than they have before. I saw Marc Gasol at 38 points the other night.
Career high. Yeah, they're picking it up.
And he doesn't even like, how many sheets of paper do you think you could put under his foot when he shoots?
It's a good question.
It's like 3 or 4. This is life as a 500 team. There's ups and downs.
Especially a young 500 team where their two best players, at least two of their three best players and most important players, are 19 and 20 years old.
Absolutely. And the context of this team has been well documented. The veterans are teaching the youngsters and it's all a process, but the Sam Mitchell, what do we want to call it?
Criticism? Is that too late? I got more than one Fire Mitchell tweet at me at last night's game against Orlando.
I searched it.
From different people. It's heavy right now.
The vitriol is strong. The hate is strong, and Mitchell is an easy target.
Sure.
Under the
surface. There are things to criticize. There are things to criticize with every coach. Maybe more so some with Mitchell right now. It's easy to get emotional with a guy that is coaching such prized young talent.
Because it's so easy to just coach him and make him be good. Right. Because they're so talented.
My question to those who are tweeting at me and Zach and everybody else that, writes about basketball, what do you think would happen to the Wolves team in this state where their head coach, president, owner just passed away, if they just got rid of their, interim replacement? He's got the interim tag on him.
Would not make any sense.
What good would come from that?
it would be totally inexplicable just because you and I both know that Glenn Taylor has an admiration for Sam Mitchell.
Sure.
He believes he's, you know, matured as a human and an adult since his time in Toronto, and I think Sam would tell you the same thing. We're going to go down the list, you know, as the season has gone on, and even dating back to before the season with the Zach LaVine starting and shooting guard thing. We've sort of seen different decisions that he's made happen, and then the conversation fizzles out. And with the way, you know, part of this too is Sam Mitchell doesn't have the most transparent answers or explanations with the media, and I half want to fault him for that, and I half, you know, I see that both ways. I understand a guy in his position, you know, there are a lot of coaches who would rather not talk to media if they didn't have to, and at the same time, there are a lot of guys who would be a little more open with the media. Sure. He's in a frustrating spot. He didn't choose to be here. We didn't choose to have Sam Mitchell, so that attributes to some of these fans' frustration, I think.
Yep.
And so it's just been, you know, there was the LaVine thing, and I think it will be good to go down the list because eventually we're going to land at Towns not playing in fourth quarters. But it started with the LaVine thing, and it was, you know, we got to play Tayshaun because Tayshaun's going to help us defensively, and then lo and behold, the Wolves' starting lineup is the best defensive lineup in the league.
Right. The interesting thing with the LaVine thing is originally in the preseason, LaVine was the starting shooting guard. And then he got moved to point guard. But when he was the starting shooting guard, there was backlash from all over, not just fans. You know, there was some backlash. I think there was some stuff written,
too. Is this too early? Are you anointing him too soon?
Exactly. Which is, I guess, fair criticism. He's 20, and then you got totally Wiggins next to him. But now it seems like with the way he looks like he's improved certain aspects of his game. And
you're talking Zach LaVine.
Yeah, LaVine. And the struggles that Kevin Martin has also had. It suddenly seems like the majority wants him to start next to Wiggins and Rubio now.
Well, no? Yeah, the most desired lineup from this fan base that I can tell is the Rubio, LaVine, Shabazz, Bielitsa, Towns.
Wiggins,
yeah. Wiggins. Rubio, LaVine, Wiggins, Shabazz, Towns. However you want to do it. You need those first three.
Yes.
And that, to a certain extent, has happened. I don't have the numbers pulled up. Zach LaVine, 15.8 points per game in 28 minutes over his last five, shooting 40%, although he's shooting 25% from the three-point line. He has played noticeably better if we're going off the eye test.
Yeah.
His plus-minus is still negative, but, you know, granted the role he's in and still playing out of position and still learning, I think he's been okay. And I think you can give Sam Mitchell a pass on what he did by naming LaVine the shooting guard and then going back to Tayshaun Prince because he wanted to get the Wolves to a good start defensively, and they did.
That lineup, that starting lineup with Tayshaun Garnett in there was really, really effective.
And it stagnated offensively. It had its flaws.
Yes.
And Tayshaun Prince picked up Mike Miller syndrome and doesn't want to shoot and just keeps passing, and that's fine because they played good defense. I mean, is Sam Mitchell being accountable in his actions then? Because he explained it and then it happened. You can statistically prove that he sort of did what he was going to accomplish. But then when he took Prince out and put Kevin Martin in, he wanted to get Kevin Martin going. Kevin Martin hasn't gotten going, which raises other questions. You know, I think I saw a few tweets. David Naylor, if you're listening, I don't mean to call you out, but Kevin Martin, he was questioning whether Kevin Martin is unplayable, and I think it's a little premature for unplayable talk, unless you think differently.
I don't think he's unplayable. Not, he has played to the point where such consideration I get from, you know, David's a smart guy. Even last game, he started to pick it up a little bit. You just know that Martin, even if he's going to have his worst year of his career, which, man, that's looking way down the line, assuming a lot. Let's say that happens. You know he's going to bust out a 35-point game at some point.
It would. I think we're all in agreement that it would shock us if Martin continued to play this poorly.
His shot is so flat right now, but I think the biggest problem with him, which can be fixed, is instead of just taking these open shots that he's made forever, he's trying to draw fouls at this alarmingly high rate, which he's been good at for a long time, but it seems like that's all he's doing this year.
And that's not a bad strategy. I think continuity at the point guard position with Rubio's absences hurts.
Yeah.
You can tell the stark contrast in the way LaVine feeds Martin the ball, usually not on time. not often in the right spot compared to Rubio. And to Levine, in defense of Levine, Rubio is like the best passer in the league. So
it's a tough expectation to live up to.
Kevin Martin, 11.9 points per game. He's shooting 34% from the field on the season, less than 30% from three. So he is struggling. He hasn't gotten going yet. That strategy hasn't worked. So how long Mitchell stays with it, I don't know. But it hasn't worked.
Right.
The Rubio injury is unsettling.
Yeah. There was, I know that Andy with Punch Drunk Wolves has been voiced his concern a little bit more than other people, because I think even still most people are wanting to give him the, you know, relax. It's a day to day
thing. We got Arnie Kanter, so that's, everything's fine.
Right. But last year, wasn't it an ankle injury that kept him out last year? I'm not saying that they're related, but I mean it's an ankle injury again. There's plenty of reason to be concerned, given just, you know, it's the same body part. It's the same. It's an ankle.
And you can go back to Sam Mitchell and the communication too. We aren't told that. Now, recently as before the last home game against Orlando, I know PR sent Arnie Kanter out to answer questions for Rubio because this same thing happened. Arnie Kanter went and talked to the media before the Sacramento game in Sacramento to answer for why Rubio wasn't playing. And then they did it again before the Orlando game. And what they have projected is Arnie Kanter has told Rubio he can't play when on those nights that he doesn't play. And so, I mean, if you're being cautious, you're being cautious. The transparency thing, I don't think there's any debate that Mitchell could do a better job of being transparent. He could be telling the truth when he says he doesn't know anything, but if you're the head coach of a basketball team and you don't know anything about your point guard's injuries, I got to question the job you're doing at head coach, because you should know.
There, a lot of times when the coach says, you know, I don't know what's going on, I need to talk to the trainer first. That usually happens before or after the game. During practice, you'd imagine that communication would have already happened. I like that Kander's doing the press because, you know, he should do that. He's the expert.
If Sam Mitchell isn't going to answer,
right,
somebody has.
Well, I mean, he's more knowledgeable in that field anyway. It's better to talk to people that, I mean, it's his specialty. As long as Ricky Rubio is just being kept out for precautionary reasons,
as long as they're not forcing
then,
him,
then it seems like the odds are he's fine. While I understand the worry and the concern from fans, writers, everybody, he's had a history of injuries. If they're saying it's precautionary, if Arnie Kanter is saying it's precautionary, and we're giving him a lot of, you know, praise early on in the season, benefit of the doubt, exactly, then I'm going to believe him for now.
Yeah, and I totally understand that. Like I said, that communication needs to happen. And let's not rule out that Ricky Rubio is a competitor and might not communicate exactly how he feels if he wants to play. And he knows that if he says something and that could keep him out of the game, he might not say it. I have no evidence to suggest that is the type of person Rubio is, but it's a possibility.
He plays, he's so competitive and he plays so hard. There's no way of knowing for sure, but he seems like the type of competitor that would lie about how badly hurt he is just to get out there.
And regardless of how hurt he is, when you don't play him, you're saving him from himself.
Right.
Because he plays tenacious. He plays at a frenetic pace at both ends of the floor. That's, you know, you can get hurt doing that. You can get hurt trying really hard. So he is the only Timberwolves player to average more than not only 35 minutes a game, but more than, no, Andrew Wiggins is, I'm sorry. Andrew Wiggins is averaging 35 minutes a game. The next highest is Rubio with 29. So Sam Mitchell taking that cautious approach with the almost platoon type rotations. I think I saw something in the Wall Street Journal that showed the Wolves bench unit has spent more time on the court together than any other bench unit in the NBA. And in turn, the statistic that Fox Sports North likes to show during these games is that the Wolves are the highest scoring bench unit. Well, of course they are. They play more than anybody else.
Play a lot more than anybody else, if I remember right.
And I don't know if I necessarily hate the platoons, because one of the complaints, why can't Andre Miller play more minutes? It's like, well, he is old, and when he plays once, how many days rest does he need after that?
Well, he's still, I'd be fine if Miller played. My big thing, if they're going to play Levine at the point, and they haven't done this a lot, is it, I'm not the first person to have this idea. I'd love to see LaVine come in for Kevin Martin with Rubio still on the floor.
Yeah, we've said that.
And just give him some run.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they close with it every now and again, but why not, you know, throw it out there in the first quarter a little bit. Throw Wiggins, LaVine, Towns, and Bielitsa.
And even then, you go back to, that is, we can file that under nitpicking.
Sure.
I'm guilty, you're guilty, we're all guilty.
We're all guilty.
And you bring up a good point. Consistently, I think Mitchell has tried to go with that Rubio, LaVine, Wiggins, and often Baz, if possible.
Yeah, that's happened.
Baz is a different conversation. I think he has trouble getting open on things that aren't like when he's running around screens and then diving to the basket. I don't know if he's fast enough to get open, and I think he still struggles defensively, but he's played down the stretch. And the big talker, at least recently, in the last five games, Sam Mitchell has elected to go with Gorgui Dieng over Karl Anthony Towns.
Yes.
And to Sam Mitchell's credit, they got the win against Philadelphia. I know Gorgui played down the stretch in that one.
Yes.
They got the win over Atlanta. Gorgui played down the stretch in that one. Mm-hmm. They got the win over Sacramento. Gorgui played down the stretch in that one. And that game, you know, no DeMarcus, no Ricky Rubio, but that game was never in doubt. The Wolves sustained like a 6-13 point lead throughout most of the game. It was uncomfortable to watch. When is the last time you've seen that? They've just held a comfortable lead throughout most of the game. And it's like, well, the Kings have no chance. And then the Clippers fiasco.
Yeah, it was bad.
Mitchell tries to go with Rorgie down the stretch and then puts Towns in with 3 minutes left. And it's too late by then. And, you know, similar, more or less similar story with Orlando. Gorgui played down the stretch. Towns never re-entered. That game is sort of, I set it aside from the other ones because it was a horrible beginning and then they fought back to keep it tight at the end. And I think from what I saw on Twitter, universally, or majority of people thought Gorgui outplayed Towns in that game. What do you think? You were there.
The Orlando game?
Yeah, the most recent.
Yeah, it wasn't even a question. I thought offensively and defensively, Gorgui outplayed Towns. He was making more shots. He wasn't forcing anything. Even Nikola Vucevic was playing really good D on Towns, in Towns' defense. But defensively, Dieng was playing much better on Vucevic. He was keeping him out of the lane, keeping him out of his sweet spots better. He didn't shoot very well after a while. I think in part because of how well Dieng played. I've been a little bit of a critic with bringing or keeping Towns off the bench, mainly just in that Clippers game, though.
The Clippers was the most outrage, I think, I've seen.
When you're playing as well as Towns was playing in that game, you got to throw him in. But if you're winning with a certain group of players, and this is almost all coaches, good coaches do this, even if the guy you have on the bench was playing well, if a certain group is playing well and keeping a lead or building a lead, you keep that group in.
Well, Kevin McHale benched James Harden in the playoffs last year. Who would have thought that could have happened?
I remember a couple years ago, or this may have been longer than that, I think it was Derek Williams' rookie year, Rick Adelman had sat Ricky Rubio and Kevin Love for the remainder of a stretch against, ironically, the Clippers. Because Derek Williams and Michael Beasley both had 27 points and they beat the Clippers. Stuff like this happens all the times where better players come out. I'm not saying that Gorgui had 27 points. He didn't play all that well statistically. But the lineups have played well for the most part with him out there. I get why he's out there.
This is where we need to get really nuanced, because this is the conversation people can't seem to have in a sensible way. Gorgui Dieng, he's older. He's 25, 26. You and I have talked previously about how he is a confident guy.
Yes.
Professional athletes usually tend to be confident guys. And Gorgui doesn't, from the outside looking in, doesn't seem to be the confident guy. Seems to be that nice dude from Africa. He speaks five languages. He's really sophisticated, yada, yada, yada. Gorgui Dieng is a really confident dude, and that's putting it politely. Physically, he sort of is what he is. He could get bulkier. He's not going to grow any bigger. he could put on muscle. Sure, he could get stronger.
A little. He's pretty strong for his frame already.
Yeah, and his frame. Holy buckets! He could be skinnier and weaker. I think he.
Yeah, he's a strong dude. All things considered,
there's no doubt that Gorgie works hard, and you know he does all the right things in order to earn that time on the court. There is no dispute that Towns has been a more impactful player than Gorgie down the stretch, or anytime one of them is on the court. You compare the two, it's no contest. Towns is a better player than Gorgie and more impactful.
Yes.
Gorgie is more experienced than Towns. Sam Mitchell might like that, to where he's playing him more down the stretch. But I pulled up the clutch statistics, and the Wolves this season, in the last 5 minutes, either ahead or behind within five points, they've been in that clutch situation, quote-unquote, 55 minutes this season out of 874.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to Towns. Towns has played in 43 of 55 of those minutes. He's getting crunch time reps. In fact, he's already gotten them. Gorgie has comparatively only played 11 minutes. And they've been in these recent games. You know, the Sacramento, I don't know if it counted. He played down the stretch, but the Wolves had such a lead, it didn't count for the statistic. And the Clippers game sort of fits into that, too. They had about a 10-point lead late in the game. But, you know, the value of late-game repetitions, you can't simulate in practice.
Right.
But Towns has gotten a fair amount of those reps. And Gorgie, although he is physically sort of who he is, he could learn more by playing more. And I don't think he's hit his ceiling yet. So between what Jim Peterson has said that Sam Mitchell told him with, you know, trying to save Towns' body, he played 20 minutes in 20 games last year at Kentucky, yada, yada, yada. He's trying to conserve him and milk whatever he can get. And maybe the Wolves are 10-8 right now if they play Towns down the stretch.
Maybe,
but
maybe not.
it's not a huge deal, I don't think.
What are the... Maybe they could be 9-9 in the Orlando game. Who knows? It's so hard to figure how well a guy is going to do in the minutes he doesn't play. Especially when, in this Orlando game specifically, he wasn't playing well and the guy that was in for him was playing well. They went on that big run, that big comeback, weirdly enough, because Bielitsa and Jang were playing this just outstanding pick-and-roll defense on the Magic. Like, Vucevic and Payton and Oladipo couldn't get anything going. And then Wiggins was just scoring up the wazoo on them. And the three games that, with the exception of the Clippers game, that's the fourth game, and then the Magic would be the fifth game. But those three games that this criticism started, they won. So what can you... You can get on Mitchell for not playing Towns at the end of those games...
Because those games are valuable. Those are valuable situations.
Right. But, yeah, exactly. But of those five games in total, they've won three. And then this last one, Mitchell was totally justified to not bring Townsend.
And if the way the Wolves have played thus far, I think it's definitely an indication that they've bought into what the coaching staff has sort of told them. It's... The Wolves could be down 20 in the second half, and they are going to play hard until the very end.
Yes.
That, to me, is, you know, the players buying into what the coach is selling them. So, you know, granted, in those clutch situations that the Wolves have been in, they're 6-7. And Towns, in those situations, is 5-5, and then Gorgie's 1-4. So nobody is disputing that the Wolves would be better off with Towns on the court. And...
Sure.
Nobody is disputing that those repetitions are valuable to both players. But who's to say that those situations won't occur again as the season continues? And one of them is going to continue to get that opportunity.
Yeah, this isn't going to be a thing where Gorgie is just going to play at the end of every close game the rest of the season. Towns is going to play at the end of games way more than Jang is going to play. It's not even... This isn't going to be a thing in a month. Watch.
And,
it's not.
And we haven't even gotten into, because you don't need to, because it's logical in itself, the Wolves received calls on draft night for one player and one player only, from my understanding, and that was for Gorgie Jang. He's still on his rookie deal. he has some trade value, but it's not even about trade value. He needs to learn to get better. And if, as Sam Mitchell has said all along, getting better and developing your young players is the goal, I think he's done a relatively good job of doing that. The way Wiggins has started to take over in late-game situations, we've alluded to Levine's improvement. Towns is going to get his time eventually. I don't necessarily think, you know, if he all of a sudden suffers an injury and can't come back until last season, are we really going to be thinking about those clutch time minutes he didn't play before he got injured and how it impacted his development? No.
Everyone's going to be all excited about that rookie of the year for the first month of the season.
And getting the number one draft pick because we've got a tank.
Speaking of that, have you seen, this is totally off,
that's
off
okay.
the cusp.
I think we, well.
Ben Simmons' stat line tonight versus North Florida. You ready? 43 points. 14 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 steals, 3 blocks.
We're happy for Ben Simmons.
Hey, we're talking about the number one pick. I'm just saying.
Well,
power forward.
If the way the Wolves are playing is any indication, we're not even going to be coming close to it. So the Wolves
get excited,
seem to be
Sixers
okay.
fans.
Is there any angle you do not think we covered with the Towns Gorgie thing?
No, it's we've covered it. Towns is going to get his. There might be a sliver of, you know, the Jang trade value thing, maybe somewhere in there.
It's
they've won more games than they've lost in this stretch. This isn't a long stretch. Just everybody calm down. That's what it comes down to. The sky is not falling.
And I am probably hammering this point. I mean, Gorgui Jang deserves a chance to get better, right?
Yeah.
It can't feel good for him to see a rookie number one overall pick come on the team when he started a lot of games last year, and you know his role diminishes now. So he still deserves the right to get better. I don't think you could take that away from him, especially where the franchise is at this juncture.
And can we also mention that most 19-year-old rookies, with maybe the exception of LeBron, they're always going to sit in stretches that they'll never sit later in their careers, even if he turns into this, you know, Patrick Ewing, best-case scenario type freak that people are hoping he can turn into.
And there are already people who interrupted you saying, well, Wiggins, you know, Wiggins, this is not the same.
This is not even Towns, close. Everyone was hurt last year.
I don't think Towns is physically, you know, the longer body and the growing body. I will confidently say, I don't have the metrics or the analytics or whatever evidence to back it up, but that a larger player is more injury-prone than an Andrew Wiggins type player. And if we're being cautious, Towns is a guy you might want to be cautious
about. Not to mention last year, who were you going to bring in if Wiggins was going to be on the bench? Gorgie is a much better option than anyone the Wolves had to bring in for Wiggins off the bench. Unless they wanted to keep Glenn Robinson III.
He led the Wolves in win shares last year, Gorgie Jang did, I think. If you look on basketball wrestling. So he's a good player. And where was he drafted? 24th?
Late first round.
So I think Gorgie is an underappreciated player at this point.
He's playing up to his draft pick, at least.
For sure. And I think every team in the league would love to have Gorgie Jang as a backup center, and the Wolves
sure
too. Speaking of centers, Nikola Pekovic talked to the media recently, apparently is very positive and optimistic about coming back, and I don't necessarily think we have a timetable, but that's exciting.
Sure, yeah. It would be great. I mean, despite having the highest scoring bench in the league, the Wolves could use a steady staple, in fact, to, you know, even if it's 12, 15 minutes a game.
I like thinking about the Bielitsa-Peck tandem.
That'd be fun.
If you remember Mike Prada's feature on what made Love and Peck so cool, I think Bielitsa is every bit of the stretch four that Kevin Love was.
And he can pass like Love, too.
So that is exciting to me. And you already see it with Bielitsa and Gorgie. Gorgie can seal near the basket, and Bielitsa's good at getting it into him. Damian Rudez, props to him, came in the Atlanta game. And if you'll remember when they got him, Glenn Taylor told Doogie Wolfson that there's no real place on this team. And everybody was like, oh, he's getting bought out and he's not going to make it. And rah-rah, Lorenzo Brown. And that wasn't the case. And Damian likes to play. You see him with his obscure...
Oh, he's always ready.
Squats. He's the new always ready Robbie Hummel, except he's the always ready Rudej.
Yeah.
But that was, he had a nice game. He's a good shooter. Still allergic to the rebounding thing, but oh well. Garnett, I don't know if there's any, like last year, played 5 games and never played again.
Yep.
But he seems to be in good spirits, and I think that's a key to all of this. If he's not invested, I worry about the team's overall investment.
And one other player that I think I'm almost surprised is so invested in the team is Andre Miller. I kind of went on a little Twitter rant yesterday. Yeah.
Elaborate.
He's William Bowl posted a video on the Wolf Among Wolves Facebook page even. He's always up and he's always coaching. Other than Garnett, there is no player that gets into a young guy's face more than Andre Miller.
Tayshaun Prince is too.
Oh, he is, but Andre, he looks like a coach. I'm not saying.
Could be a coach.
I'm just
saying. Oh, get it!
I'm just saying, though. I'm just saying. Yeah, I'm just saying.
But he's always up. He's always talking. I just enjoy the fact that he's not there just getting paychecks. He's clearly invested in what's going on with the team.
Your tweet specifically said, for those who think Andre Miller is just receiving paychecks. Did somebody say that to you verbatim?
No, I just think that usually when
that's the perception,
quote-unquote, washed-up 39-year-old point guard that isn't playing is on an NBA roster. It's fair to assume, the Jalen Rose thing, go get those checks. That's what you assume he's doing. But he's not just sitting down, checking his phone, eating candy or whatever.
Two things.
He's invested. No, that's my whole point, though. I'm glad that he's actually invested, despite not being all that good anymore. He's not just there collecting. He's trying to serve a role.
Absolutely.
That's my point.
There's no doubt in anybody's mind. I don't think there's any cancers in the locker room. Even Kevin Martin has been gracefully professional throughout all this. And everybody seems to have bought in.
Yes.
And it gets back to the greater point. Why would you fire Sam Mitchell? It doesn't make sense. They never had a chance to bring in somebody else. It doesn't make sense to fire him now. And frankly, when it comes down to it, I think Sam Mitchell will be the coach as long as Kevin Garnett is on the roster.
I think it's totally fair at the end of the season to take a long, hard look at other candidates and let Mitchell state his case.
And the team will have stated a case for him.
Yeah. But there is no reason right now to let him go. There's no reason. If the team seems to be bought in with everything that happened with Flip Saunders, it would be ridiculous to let him go mid-season, especially when they're 8-10. I just can't get past that point enough. With all the little nitpicking that the internet's doing, that we've been doing in this podcast and past podcasts, and we're going to do in future podcasts.
We openly say that that's what we're doing.
Everyone nitpicks.
We don't do it with any vitriol or hatred.
Of course. With all of that happens, they are 8-10. That's not going to get you to the playoffs, but with your two best players, or two of your three best players being 19 and 20, one of your hopeful next best players, LaVine, being 20. They're so young, yet they're 8-10, and their young guys are looking so good. They're looking sound defensively a decent amount of the time. This shouldn't be a conversation that we should be having right now.
And Orlando, decent team, plays hard.
Scott Skiles is a good coach.
I think there's a lot of parallels between the two. Young teams.
Yes.
Scott Stiles may not necessarily be the coach of the future in Orlando. I don't think there's any dispute about that. But he has them playing hard. They play good defense, and he has at times during this season has said, Vucevic, you're sitting. You ain't playing. You got to try harder. So interesting parallels there, and those two games, close games, one of them in overtime, and sort of flip-flop. Orlando came back and beat the Wolves, and then the Wolves came back, almost beat Orlando.
Both by three, yep.
And if you are on the other side of the outcome in those two games, we're talking about the Wolves being 10-8.
Yep.
And at that point, not even talking about where they're at now, 8-10, they've certainly exceeded expectations. I think as of now, 18 games through the season, Sam Mitchell, I'll give him a, not a what's the E? Exemplary? I'll give him the P, the proficiency, the standardized test rankings I'm talking
about. I like that.
So I'll give him the P, not the E, which is third out of fourth.
That's good.
What would you give him? And you can use any scale. You don't need to use the 4-point scale. You can get freaky with it, creative.
I mean, I'll just give him the regular grading scale. He's getting a B for me. He's doing some things that I don't like every now and again.
Ooh.
Do you want me to say what those things
are?
No.
We didn't talk about the media angle in all of this. There's been comparisons between Mitchell and Greg Popovich. Now he talks to the media, which...
I think the difference between Mitchell and Greg Popovich is Greg Popovich, he responds at times with some snark, but it's generally in good spirits. He doesn't seem to be going at anybody.
And he has relationships with all of those people.
He has good relationships.
A lot of it's a front.
Right. It seems, and I don't want to, burn any bridges, so I'm not going to say anything too bad, but Mitchell's not doing that. I don't think he has any really close personal relationships with any media members, and I could be wrong about that.
No, there's definitely some substance to, we already mentioned it earlier, you could be a little bit more transparent, but the people who aren't there to ask him questions, shove off.
Right.
You don't need to come and defend the media jackals for the way that they're... I mean, we'll be okay.
We're fine.
I told it, and I hate saying we talked off air because I hate it when people say that on podcasts, but we talked before going on and recording this that you can ask him questions with virtually nothing to lose. You know what type of answer he's going to give you, so why not just fire stuff out there?
The last game... I don't know the reporter's name. I wish I did. The first question that was asked was about
Towns.
Why didn't Towns play in the fourth quarter? He didn't get an answer out of him. He's still going to have credentials at the next game.
Yeah.
Media's going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
Yeah, we're going to be. I mean, we've told the story where I've asked him about self-assessment. He asked me if I evaluated my stories after I write them. It's like, you don't see me crying to the masses. It's like, I can take it. And if anything, if you ask him enough of those questions, he gives you enough of those condescending answers. I like to think Sam Mitchell is a decent enough guy to understand at some point what he's doing and that you might feel bad or I might feel bad in getting all, perpetually not getting very good responses. And maybe he feels bad and then maybe he gives you a nugget sometime.
Could be.
Maybe it's a better nugget than you've ever had. I mean, he is still adjusting. It's been a while since he's been a coach. I don't think anybody expected him to be flawless. If anything, all of these distractions have prevented us from talking about, how the Wolves offense is. Similarly to when it was orchestrated by Flip Saunders, still shooting a lot of mid-range jumpers and not a lot of threes and not a lot of corner threes, and it has all of those problems still, but nobody talks about them.
That's not the hot topic right now.
No. We have way more nitpicky things to complain about. So, what can you do?
Nothing.
Any around the league stuff? Kobe?
Kobe had a big old game.
We're happy for him. It's cool. Kobe's awesome. I mean, you go to his...
I love Kobe.
When he came here last year, there was more Laker fans than Wolves fans.
That's happened for... I've been coming to games... You're going to throw a little brag out there. I've been coming to games since 96, his rookie year. Not covering, certainly, because I was 5 years old in 1996.
That would have been impressive.
The
young media prodigy.
Yeah, I would be very... I'm not going to get into my professional career hopes and dreams, but... Anyway, I've been coming to games since 1996, and there has always been a half-and-half, at least, dynamic going on between Laker fans and Wolves fans, between, the Shaq and Kobe years and the Powell and Kobe years and the current Kobe years. Kobe has a faithful fan base that is international. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's like Jeremy Lin times 10.
Yes. Maybe and much more well-deserved. No offense to Jeremy Lin. He's fine.
Speaking of Wolves home games, Wolves are 29th in attendance. So there's that.
Yeah, there were a lot of empty seats.
Last complaining, not a lot of people going to games when they're finally a product that you can see to go to games. I know I sound like a sponsor right now, but
going to games, Ricky Rubio, Carl Towns, and Andrew Wiggins are good. They're Garnett. Fun. They're young.
I said when
Garnett is on the team, this is going to be his last year.
All those hipsters that once said, I only cared about basketball when Garnett was on the Timberwolves, I have no excuse anymore.
How many of those people have you talked to? I've talked to
none. They don't exist anymore.
Countless people that used to say that.
Gosh, and they just won't admit to... becoming a wolf.
Well, he's not good anymore. Go watch him if you care. They don't care.
Sorry, Wolves fan base.
Yeah, we're all fan.
We didn't mean to offend you, but this is where we're at.
Well, okay. The people that haven't watched the Wolves since the Garnett years aren't listening to this podcast.
No.
There's no way.
No, but we have sort of, ragged on people for nitpicking. And
yeah, and we nitpick. We know.
Jordan, if you're listening to this, you suck. Quit tweeting me. Sam Mitchell's not going to get fired. Do I have anything to say to Jordan? We got no fake today, so...
Yeah, we don't have our intern. No, I got nothing to say to Jordan.
For Tim Fakeless, Sporting News contributor, Wolf Among Wolves contributor, at TimFakLis. For me, Zachary Bennett, at ZacharyBD. For the Hardwood Paroxysms and Basketball Network at HPB Network. This has been the Wolves Wired Podcast. Be sure to email us, wolveswired@gmail.com. We'll catch you in a couple days. So long.